morning. This is the KBOO Morning News for Thursday, May 18th, 2006. I'm Brian Smith. Hey. Coming up on this morning's news, the Northwest Power and Conservation Council has adopted its first regional energy standard. The House of Representatives has approved a bill that will speed up salvage logging on burned forests and the planting of monocultural in the aftermath. Confirmation hearings begin today for Michael Hayden's nomination to the top slot at the CIA. And in Afghanistan, some of the fiercest violence in 5 years has left more than 105 people dead and many more injured. Portland area weather today, partly sunny at the coast with patchy morning fog, mostly sunny inland with highs in the 80s. And tonight, mostly cloudy at the coast, partly cloudy inland and lows in the 50s.
This coming Sunday at 7 a.m. sharpish, the Trojan nuclear plant cooling tower will be imploded, taking with it many nightmares, but many people are concerned about the inevitable contamination. KBOO's Doug Guidi spoke with Dr. Catherine Thompson.
What are the overall dangers of investing in nuclear power?
Well, I think this whole week here at KBOO, where you are really looking at the issue of the Trojan power plant and how it's a microcosm of the bigger concerns that people continue to have about nuclear power, is absolutely where we need to be looking. Nuclear power isn't any safer than it was before. You have to get the uranium concentrated with a number of exposures along the way to a point where you actually have fuel. The fuel has to be safeguarded and put into a plant that can potentially have accidents, that can potentially be sabotaged and or have leaks. So we have a variety of health effects while the plant is being created, running, and then the part that isn't really costed in is the what do we do with the waste? So we have waste that is stored right at nuclear power plant sites. In fact, five times as much nuclear waste is at nuclear power plants compared to how much is active fuel, and it is much less safeguarded, even though it continues to emit radiation. It has to be in a pool, otherwise it'll ignite and contaminate the whole area, but it is not as well contained as the nuclear power plant itself. And then we're talking long-term storage, and long-term storage hasn't been solved anywhere in the world. Even France, that gets 75% of its electricity from nuclear power, ships its waste to Russia, and I really don't want to know how it's stored there.
Proponents of nuclear power claim that it's safer than ever before.
Anytime you have an industry that has developed and evolved, you're going to have a better product. They're more able to concentrate what they need with less material and produce more electricity from it. The Chernobyl accident occurred within 3 months of going online. So it very well may be that nuclear power plants in operation are safer than they were before. I think that we're all safe to say that. However, you're still left with all the issues that they have to be perfect. They have to have enough fail-safe mechanisms that you're not releasing any radiation anytime. We've got six plants here in the United States releasing tritium, you know, irradiated water that actually has a radioactive component to it that was attempted to be covered up. So they're not perfect, and they can't be. So I think that the more emphasis our technological systems in this country can be to increase the potential for solar, wind, geothermal, tidal, energy, and our ability to export that and support other countries to use that as electricity, rather than developing nuclear power, which under the Non-Proliferation Treaty they are entitled to develop. Again, it's ludicrous. So, again, we need to get rid of nuclear power for the accidents, the radiation, the uranium, but we also need to get rid of it because it threatens our entire world structure.
That was Dr. Catherine Thompson speaking with KBOO's Doug Guidi.
According to the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, after publicly expressing disapproval over the numerous setbacks and cost overruns plaguing the Hanford cleanup, members of Congress are proposing a $1.8 billion for the project next year, but with strings. Lawmakers want the Energy Department to abandon its potentially risky accelerated approach that has construction of a treatment facility underway while overall design is just 70% completed. Instead, they want to adopt a more conservative, though possibly slower, process for building the multi-billion dollar complex to clean up nuclear waste. The budget proposal puts the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in charge of monitoring and confirming the safety of the plant being erected near the banks of the Columbia River. Congress also is calling for revisions in the agreement between the Energy Department and the contract for the treatment plant, Bechtel National. To ensure better performance, the House budget proposal says a project to turn into glass millions of gallons of radioactive and toxic waste being stored in leak-prone underground tanks has a long and sordid history, including cost overruns and mismanagement.
By a vote of 243-182, the U.S. House approved a bill yesterday to speed up salvage logging of burned forests and planting of new trees after storms and wildfires. The measure demands that federal land hit by disasters greater than 1,000 acres be restored within months rather than years. The bill now heads to the Senate, where Oregon Republican Gordon Smith has proposed a similar measure. The measure's co-sponsor in the House, Washington Democrat Brian Baird, called it a common-sense plan that will be good for the environment and the economy as well. But most Democrats oppose the bill, arguing that cutting large old-growth trees and planting new ones results in forests that are more vulnerable to fires and less valuable as habitat for fish and wildlife. They say it's better to allow forests to come back on their own. 41 Democrats joined 202 Republicans in supporting the bill. Opponents also criticized the bill's name, the Forest Emergency Recovery and Research Act.
The Federal Environmental Protection Agency has approved a toxic sediment dump along the Willamette River as an early action to remove pollution in a six-mile stretch designated as a federal Superfund site. The $30 million project would involve dredging sediments contaminated with heavy metals, pesticides, and PCBs and confining them in a slip on the east side of the river. The Superfund site was designated in 2000. The Port of Portland's Director of Environmental Affairs, Cheryl Koschuta, said design and construction could take 3 or more years. Work in the river must protect endangered salmon and will take place mostly in summer.
State officials may ask federal regulators to require pest control companies to ventilate homes after spraying for bugs. Officials are considering the possibility in response to the case of an elderly woman who died a few hours after her home was sprayed last summer. The state epidemiologist investigating the death said there's a growing number of illnesses linked to the chemical contained in the spray that was used in Florence Colbeck's home. Colbeck and her husband coughed, choked, and spit when they re-entered their Florence home 3 hours after it was sprayed. Colbeck soon collapsed. When paramedics arrived at the scene, they collapsed too. State health investigators found that the pyrethroid chemicals and the pesticides probably caused Colbeck's death, along with her history of heart problems. State epidemiologist Michael Heumann has been reviewing statistics for cases similar to Colbeck's. From 1998 to 2003, there have been cases of people getting sick after exposure to pyrethroid chemicals that have been used in spraying for pests. During that period, there were more than 150 cases nationally of people reporting symptoms after an indoor spray of pesticides.
Oregon's Court of Appeals overturned a landmark $150 million jury verdict against Philip Morris yesterday and ordered a new trial to reconsider damages against the tobacco manufacturer after a trial judge ruled the amount was excessive. The March 2002 verdict was the first such award in the nation based on claims that low-tar cigarettes led smokers to believe they were less dangerous than regular cigarettes. A jury ordered Philip Morris to pay $150 million in punitive damages to the estate of Michelle Schwartz of Salem, who died of lung cancer in 1999 at the age of 53. The jury had agreed with lawyers for her family who claimed that Philip Morris fraudulently marked its low-tar merit brand as safer than regular cigarettes. But Multnomah County Circuit Judge Roosevelt Robinson found that amount grossly excessive and reduced it by a third to $100 million. The Oregon Court of Appeals overturned the jury verdict yesterday and sent the case back to the circuit court to reconsider the amount of punitive damages. The appeals court ruled that Robinson had failed to give the jury specific instructions requested by the tobacco company, but that he had the authority to reduce the amount of damages.
religious broadcaster Pat Robertson says God told him storms and possibly a tsunami will hit America's coastline this year. Robertson has made the predictions at least four times in the past 2 weeks on his news and talk television show, The 700 Club, on the Christian Broadcasting Network. Robertson says the revelations about this year's weather came to him during his annual personal prayer retreat in January. Robertson said on May 8th, "If I heard the Lord right about 2006, the coasts of America will be lashed by storms." Yesterday, Robertson added, "There very well may be something as bad as a tsunami in the Pacific Northwest." Prominent Republican on Capitol Hill has prepared legislation that would rewrite internet privacy rules by requiring that logs of Americans' online activities be stored. This according to CNetNews.com. The proposal comes just weeks after Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez said internet service providers should retain records of user activity for a, quote, reasonable amount of time, unquote. A move that represented a dramatic shift in the Bush administration's views on privacy. Legislation is being prepared that would rewrite internet privacy rules by requiring that logs of Americans' online activities be stored. Bottom line, the legislation would create a federal felony targeted at bloggers, search engines, email service providers, and many other websites that might, quote, facilitate access to unlawful pornography. James Sensenbrenner, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, is proposing that ISPs be required to record information about Americans' online activities so that police can more easily conduct criminal investigations.
George Bush's CIA director nominee, General Michael Hayden, faces what undoubtedly will be the toughest public questioning of his 37-year government career at a Senate confirmation hearing. Hayden is at the center of the debate over the Bush administration's controversial domestic surveillance programs, which allowed the National Security Agency, under Hayden's leadership, to eavesdrop without warrants on telephone calls when one party was overseas and suspected of terrorism. His reception by the Senate Intelligence Committee today was expected to be much different than a year ago, when the panel approved him unanimously to be the nation's first principal deputy director of national intelligence. Some have questions whether it is appropriate to have someone like Hayden, with his lengthy resume in the military intelligence, directing the civilian spies at the CIA at a time when the intelligence community is increasingly dominated by the Pentagon. Bush chose Hayden as CIA director nominee after consulting with Hayden's current boss, National Intelligence Director John Negroponte. Outgoing CIA Director Porter Goss announced his retirement earlier this month after disputes with Hayden and Negroponte about the CIA's direction.
Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld said for the first time yesterday that if officials are at odds over whether a new Army manual should endorse different interrogation techniques for enemy insurgents than are allowed for regular prisoners of war. The debate hinges on whether suspected terrorists or other insurgents can be treated more severely than captured members of an enemy army. There are concerns such a distinction could fly in the face of a law enacted last year, pressed by Senator John McCain, that explicitly banned cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment of prisoners by U.S. troops. Senator Richard Durbin pressed Rumsfeld on whether there would be one uniform standard for interrogations, which he said was the intent of McCain's legislation. He asked whether the manual would allow anything that, quote, would be considered unlawful if it were employed against American service members, unquote. Rumsfeld did not say whether there would be one uniform standard, but he said the manual, which will guide troops on the handling of detainees, will comply with U.S. law.
A study focused on the effects of Walmart stores on poverty rates found that an estimated 20,000 families nationwide have fallen below the official poverty line as a result of the chain's expansion. This from the St. Louis Business Journal. The study, Walmart and Countywide Poverty, was written by Stephen Goetz, a professor of agricultural and regional economics at Pennsylvania State University, and Hema Swamithan for the International Center for Research on Women. Authors Goetz and Swamithan write that the presence of Walmart was unequivocally associated with smaller reductions in family poverty rates in counties nationwide during the 1990s relative to places that had no stores. The study, which sought to identify the independent effect of Walmart stores on changes in U.S. family poverty rates at the county level, found that one of the greatest effects of a Walmart opening is the closing of mom-and-pop type operations. The authors state in the study that by displacing the local class of entrepreneurs, the Walmart chain also destroys local leadership capacity. Poverty rates will rise if retail workers displaced from existing mom-and-pop type operations work for Walmart at lower wages because they have no alternatives.
President Bush is trying to show the immigration problem instead of simply talking about it. As the Senate debates major overhaul of the nation's immigration laws, Bush is traveling to Yuma, Arizona. Yuma is the embodiment of the system that Bush frequently describes, where desperate people risk their lives for a chance to earn decent wages from U.S. employers hungry for their labor. The president was to take a tour of the border today, then give a speech aimed at driving home Monday night's primetime address calling for National Guard troops to help strengthen the border while giving undocumented immigrants in the United States a chance at citizenship and allowing more foreigners to enter the country legally to work. He also planned a round of interviews with all the television networks to help sell his ideas, which faced tough opposition in Congress.
The Washington Post has this story today on consumer and environmental groups petitioning the Food and Drug Administration to regulate products, including sunscreens and cosmetics. Here's the scuttlebutt, according to the Post. Nanotechnology encompasses a wide range of materials that, because of their small size, exhibit novel chemical or biological properties. Among the FDA-regulated products being sold are sunscreens containing titanium dioxide or zinc oxide nanoparticles, which offer strong ultraviolet protection while remaining colorless, and cosmetics with nanoscale liposomes, tiny chemical bubbles that deliver moisture and other ingredients to the skin. A number of animal studies have shown that at least some nanoparticles can penetrate cells and tissues, migrate through the body and brain, and cause biochemical damage. But whether nano-spiked cosmetics and sunscreens pose health risks remains largely unknown, pending completion of long-range studies recently begun by the FDA and other agencies.
In Oklahoma, 16 people protesting Halliburton's role as a military contractor were arrested yesterday. The protest happened outside a building where shareholders discussed spinning off the subsidiary that provides meals, clean laundry, and other services to U.S. troops in Iraq. One man was accused of vandalism for tearing up a plastic fence holding back protesters, and the rest were accused of trespassing as they left an enclosure and headed toward the meeting. Halliburton announced plans last month to sell just under 20% of KBR, which has diluted the company's financial results and drawn criticism of its multi-billion-dollar contracts in Iraq. Shareholders of the world's largest provider of products and services to the petroleum and energy industries look back on a year of record earnings.
A bill to make coal mining safer won the endorsement of a key Senate committee yesterday. Senators on the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee unanimously backed the bill, a measure put together by Senators Mike Enzi and Edward Kennedy. Both lawmakers said they were moved to act after a pair of accidents in January killed 14 West Virginia coal miners. The bill also has the support of West Virginia's two senators, Democrats Robert Byrd and Jay Rockefeller. The legislation would require miners to have at least 2 hours of oxygen available instead of one, as under the current policy. It also would require mine operators to store extra oxygen packs along escape routes. The Federal Mine Safety and Health Administration recently issued a temporary rule requiring coal operators to give miners extra oxygen, but miners and their advocates have been pressing Congress for a permanent fix. The Senate bill also would require mines to have two-way wireless communications and tracking systems in place within 3 years. House lawmakers say they also hope to approve mine safety legislation. However, Republicans and Democrats in that chamber have not rallied around one approach.
story has this. The U.S. is updating contingency plans for a non-nuclear strike to cripple Iran's atomic weapon program if international diplomacy fails. Pentagon sources and strategists have confirmed that strategists have understood to have presented two options for pinpoint strikes using B-2 bombers flying directly from bases in Missouri, Guam in the Pacific, and Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean. RAF Fairford in Gloucester also has facilities for B-2s, but this has been ruled out because of the UK's opposition to military action against Tehran. The main plan calls for a rolling five-day bombing campaign against 400 key targets in Iran, including 24 nuclear-related sites, 14 military airfields and radar installations, as well as Revolutionary Guard headquarters. At least 75 targets in underground complexes would be attacked with waves of bunker-busting bombs. Iranian radar networks and air defense bases would be struck by submarine-launched Tomahawk cruise missiles and then kept out of action by carrier aircraft flying from warships in the Indian Ocean and Persian Gulf. The alternative to an all-out campaign is a demonstration strike against one or two high-profile targets, such as the Natanz uranium enrichment facility or the hexafluoride gas plant at Isfahan. UK sources say contingency plans have also been drawn up to cope with the inevitable backlash against the Basra garrison in neighboring Iraq.
And also from Ross Story, in increasing numbers, people around the globe resent American power and wealth and reject specific actions like the occupation of Iraq and the campaign against democratically elected Palestinian leaders. International polls show that the world is turning against America. The dislike is accelerating among youth. For instance, 20% of Britons under age 30 have an unfavorable opinion of Americans, double the percentage of 2002. More than half of those asked in France, Germany, Italy, Canada, and Britain said the spread of American ideas and customs was a bad thing. Almost half of those polled in Britain, France, and Germany dispute the whole concept of a global war on terrorism, and a majority of Europeans believe that invasion of Iraq was a mistake. More than two-thirds of Germans, French, and Turks believe American leaders lied about the reason for war and believe the United States is less trustworthy than it once was. In Brazil, 52% held a favorable view of the United States in 2002. By the following year, that had dropped to 34%. In Russia, the pro-American portion of the population dropped from 61% to 36% over a year.
Malnutrition among Iraqi children has reached alarming levels, according to a UN-backed government survey showing people are struggling to cope 3 years after U.S. forces overthrew Saddam Hussein. The report on food security and vulnerability in Iraq said almost one child in every 10 aged between 6 months and 5 years suffered acute malnutrition. A total of 4 million Iraqis, roughly 15% of the population, were in dire need of humanitarian and including food, up from 11% in 2003. Saddam's 35-year rule was marked by ruinous wars, first against Iran and against U.S.-fled forces in 1991, as well as crippling economic sanctions of the 1990s. The aftermath of the U.S.-led invasion has seen widespread violence with militant and sectarian attacks and killings, preventing a return to normal life for many Iraqis and hindering humanitarian aid efforts.
Some of the fiercest violence since the Taliban's ouster in 2001 erupted across southern Afghanistan, with militants battling coalition forces, detonating car bombs, and attacking a small village. Up to 105 people were killed. The violence occurred in Helmand and Kandahar provinces, where 9,000 NATO-led forces are scheduled to deploy this summer to suppress the stubborn insurgency. The Taliban death toll from fighting last night and today ranged up to 87, U.S. and Afghan officials said. Also, 14 Afghan police officers, one American civilian, a Canadian soldier, and an Afghan civilian also were killed in the fighting.
During a visit to Libya, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez has described oil prices as fair and said he would work to maintain them. Chavez said he discussed improving bilateral ties and working together on oil with Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. The two men are expected to sign an agreement, but no details are available yet. The two nations have contrasting U.S. relations, with the U.S. recently restoring ties with Libya, but imposing an arms embargo on Venezuela. Chavez met Gaddafi in a tent close to the Libyan capital, Tripoli, for talks on the final leg of a visit to Europe and North America.
Large numbers of Palestinian police have deployed in the Gaza Strip after a show of strength by a rival force set up by the Hamas-led government. Palestinian leader Mahmoud Abbas sent the police to restore order, security officials said. The deployment is being described as the largest since Israel's pullout from the territory last year. The new force includes some members of Hamas' military wing and others from existing security forces. Its role will be to ensure the safety of citizens and protect property amid a wave of instability and violence. Hamas officials announced the creation of the new force in April after Mahmoud Abbas appointed one of his supporters to lead the most important of the three branches of security services that report to the Interior Ministry. The unit will be led by Jamal Abu Shamandana, a militant who is wanted by Israel. This from the BBC.
This has been the... KBOO Morning News for Thursday, May 18th, 2006. Chris Andre edited the news. KBOO's volunteer audio engineers edited the tape. And KBOO's intrepid reporters contributed local stories. Kathleen Stevenson is the AM News and Public Affairs Director. Boone Revis is on the board right now. I'm Chris Andre.
And I'm Brian Smith.
To volunteer in the morning newsroom, call us at 503-231-8032, extension 202, or reach us by email at amnews@kboo.org. The KBOO website is www.kboo.fm. We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 100.7 FM in Corvallis on translator K264AA, 91.9 FM in Hood River on translator K220HR. Be sure to join us at 5 p.m. for a solid hour of solid news on the KBOO Evening News. Portland area weather today, partly sunny at the coast, patchy morning fog, mostly sunny inland, highs in the 80s. Tonight, mostly cloudy at the coast, partly cloudy inland, lows 50 to 55. Coming up right now.